Hello, welcome. Episode 6, I think. If I'm talking a little bit quieter, it's because it's very early in the morning whilst recording it, and I don't want to wake up the rest of the house. But ironically, moving on to the next chapter, we've done the first, or I think we've done 6. Chapter 7 is now all about sleep, and we're going to follow sleep with a chapter all about hydration. So enough waffle, I'm just going to get straight into it. Sleep. I will be the first to admit, and for those who know me personally, know my sleep is not exactly optimum. Far from it, in fact. We know it's important. If we don't get enough, we get the physical feeling of being tired. Sleep is important for recovery and health and contributes to good body function. Can you get by on less sleep than you need? Yes, of course. Will it bring potential damage to your body? The jury remains out as far as I'm aware. I've read a couple of books on the subject myself, hence why I am able to share some of my knowledge with you in this chapter. From what I have read, and as far as I know at this time, there isn't actually any physical research showing significant relationships between illness conditions and a lack of sleep. In my opinion, and this is only from my personal experience, the longer you are awake, the more opportunity there is for calorie burning, because you're more active for longer. The caveat to that is actually the lack of sleep may well make you more fatigued, and as a result, your daily activity may drop. It depends which way you look at it. Finding the middle ground of what works for you is likely to be the sensible option. A lack of sleep can also contribute to higher levels of stress. This could result in a less than optimum choice of food due to the stress and situation you are in. Again, if you are aware of this and you are able to counteract it, then the impact is reduced. Referring back to my statement above, finding what works best for you is my suggestion going forward. That said, however, we are looking for optimum performance and function, or so we should be. If you are aiming for 100% but you miss a few opportunities hitting 90% plus, this is still pretty good and will get you where you want to be. Always aim high, and if you're aiming high, aim even higher. Anyway, back to sleep. My awareness around this subject comes from two people. One, a world-renowned sleep expert, Matthew Walker, author of the book Why We Sleep. The other, an elite sports sleep coach, Nick Littlehouse, sleep expert to football teams like the 1999 Manchester United squad and various Olympians, cycling's Team Sky, and probably the most known, Cristiano Ronaldo. Nick is also author of the book Sleep. So between these two, they know all there is to know about sleeping. The notion behind getting 8 hours sleep is relatively new. Where it comes from, who knows? However, what we do know is that sleep occurs in cycles, 90-minute cycles to be exact. The recommended number of these cycles is 5, equaling to 7.5 hours sleep. Our sleep is largely controlled by our body's circadian rhythm. This is the body's internal 24-hour clock. This is controlled deep inside the brain and regulates our internal systems such as sleeping, eating, patterns, hormone production, temperature, alertness, mood and digestion. It is set to external clues like sunlight. Without going too deep, this is an evolution over millions of years and is ingrained into us. The hormone which regulates our sleep is called melatonin, which is produced as part of our circadian rhythm in the pineal gland, which responds to sunlight. Simplifying the cycle, imagine a clock face starting at 7:30 a.m. Melatonin secretion stops. We wake up. During the daytime, we go through stages of high alertness, best coordination and fastest reaction times, which works with the theory and timing of the circadian rhythm. Around 9 p.m, melatonin secretion begins and the routine of falling asleep begins. Around 2 a.m. is when we are at our deepest sleep as the cycle moves back around. Two ways in which it's recommended to improve your sleep is to improve your bedtime routine. Most people generally have a morning routine. However, an evening routine is almost non-existent. Having a plan in place to help prepare your body for sleep is important. The biggest contributor to poor sleep is not allowing your brain to switch off. Things to consider. Not eating just before bed. Not because it will cause fat gain. It won't. So forget that now. But because you don't want your digestive system going at 100 miles an hour when you're trying to get your body in a relaxed state. Switching off blue light devices, turning off the lights, switching off the television and not looking at your phone and or social media in the hour before bed all come recommended to improve your routine of falling asleep. All these things trigger your brain into action and distract you from your relaxed state. Instead of these, try reading a book, or if you must look at a device, some blue light glasses may help. Avoiding caffeine is also a fairly obvious one. One thing to note about caffeine is that it has a 6-hour half-life. What does that mean? Say, for example, you drink a coffee or energy drink at 12 noon containing 200 milligrams of caffeine. 6 hours later, at 6 p.m, there will still be 100 milligrams of caffeine in your system. So when you reach for that coffee around 4 p.m. for the late pick-me-up energy boost at work to get you through the last hour, 6 hours later at 10 p.m, the caffeine will still be in your system, affecting your sleep. Just something to think about. I won't go into too much surrounding the stages of sleep, but just be aware there are different stages. Stage 1, non-REM. Stage 2, non-REM. Stage 3, non-REM. And REM sleep. REM meaning rapid eye movement. The 90-minute cycle is made up of these, and this is where and how you feel significantly different depending on what stage of a cycle you wake up in. It is not so much the duration of sleep which makes you wake up groggy or alert. It's the state of the sleep in which you awake. We should aim to wake when sleep is at its lightest at the end of a 90-minute cycle. Knowing this, a good plan for sleep would be to work backwards from when you have your alarm set and work back 5 cycles, so 7.5 hours. Your aim being to be asleep 7.5 hours before your alarm is due to go off. To go a little bit technical here, and some may think slightly absurd, if you miss a 7.5 hour window, it has been shown it is best to wait for the next cycle. So actually stand up later to ensure you get full cycles in, rather than the alarm waking you midway through. For example, if your alarm is set for 6 a.m, the 7.5 hour cycle window would mean you going to sleep at 10:30, giving you 5 full cycles when your alarm goes off. If, however, you get in late and you are ready to jump into bed at 11, when the alarm is still set for 6, that is only 7 hours, resulting in that 6 a.m. alarm waking you up midway through a cycle. Research has shown this can affect your tiredness and alertness for most of the day. The recommended plan in this case is to actually stay up later and go to sleep at midnight, giving you 6 hours sleep, or actually 4 90-minute cycles. Try not to be tempted to change the time of your morning alarm to fit in with this guideline. It has been shown that consistently getting up at the same time helps to regulate the body's systems. So that's the end of sleep. I mean, not a lot of that has changed, really. What I would say is I probably think sleep is more important now than when I wrote this book. That is probably the honest truth, is making sure you get enough sleep is very, very important. The cycles, as far as I'm aware, are still the thing to go by. However, rather than staying up late, is I think now I would actually push my alarm later in the morning. Just because I'm used to getting up and can consistently... If you're one of these people that struggles to get out of bed in the morning and you have a long, 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 long lie in, then actually maybe that trick is not for you. Because I'm quite good at getting up, I would be quite happy one day moving that to an hour and a half later and still be able to get up the following day, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Right, I'm going to move on to the next one then. Hydration. Water is the single most important nutrient for health, growth and development. Your muscles are made up of 70% water and your brain is made up of 95% water. Even the slightest hint of dehydration can affect body function. It can impair coordination, concentration, endurance and strength, and slow down muscular response. How much water should I drink is like asking how long is a piece of string. It depends on all manner of factors, including the size and shape of the individual, how much exercise they do, and what the climate of the environment is. However, a generic figure of somewhere around the 2 to 3 litres is recommended. If you want to work out an exact figure, there are a variety of calculations which can be found online. I won't put any in here, as with all these types of calculations, they are liable to change. The main point, simple, drink plenty of water. Your body is literally made of it. Other things to consider are all liquid equal? As you can count orange juice as part of your water intake, what about squash? Fizzy drinks, coffee? Coffee actually acts like a diuretic, meaning it dehydrates the body. How about alcohol? For this one, I'm going to personally say no. You cannot count alcohol. It is also important to note food contains water as well. Going back to the initial point, depending on what you read, each person will give you a different response in what actually equates to water or fluid intake. The best way forward, in my opinion, is to consume as much clear water as you can. Failing that, opt for weak squashes. Remember, at this point, water contains no calories, but can act as an appetite suppressant simply by filling your stomach. The more water that you drink, the less food you are likely to eat. However, when you start to add other liquids such as juice, squash, fizzy drinks, alcohol, 9 calories per gram, these all contain extra calories, which will contribute to your calorie intake for the day. A simple way to measure your hydration level is by the colour and smell of your urine. The more coloured, usually yellowy, and the more it smells, let's not comment here, the more dehydrated you are. If you are passing clear urine with no distinct smell, this is usually a good sign of hydration. A quick point, some research has shown if you are taking some forms of medication or multivitamin, this can affect the theory above, but only in certain cases. That's it for this episode. A little bit of a shorter one, actually. Sleep and hydration. Obviously, we all know water is important, so I'm not really going to add anything else onto that. But like I said, with the sleep, make sure you are getting enough. Most people do not get enough sleep, mainly because they get distracted and go to sleep too late rather than actually getting up too early. I once read somewhere, nothing interesting ever happens after 9 p.m. So if that is your distraction in scrolling through social media at 9 p.m, nothing exciting is going to happen on there. So you might as well switch it off. Right, I will leave it there for this episode. Once again, thank you for listening. And in the next episode, we're looking at the psychology behind fat loss and process goals. So it's good episodes coming up. See you on the next one.